called the greatest Secretary of State in our lifetime, Secretary Mike Pompeo. Welcome for being with us. How are you, sir? Mr. Secretary, glad to have you here.
I am doing well. It is wonderful to be with you this morning. Those are very kind words, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today. I hope you're doing well, too.
I am. Thank you. And I want to jump right to it because you delivered a speech in Florida at the Palm Beach Republican Party Lincoln Day dinner that was amazing. President Trump was in attendance, and President Trump spoke after you. And what President Trump said was he was your backstop. You talked about your achievements. And when I say your, I mean the achievements of the Trump administration on foreign policy. And so I'd like for you to spend just a few minutes before we get to John Kerry to highlight what it is that the Trump administration did and what you as Secretary of State did that Americans should know and remember as we now are seeing what is happening on the world stage.
Well, it was a fun evening, and I simply recounted the work that President Trump had done, our team had done, and he gave me the privilege to go do as serving as the Secretary of State. You know, it began with this central thesis that America first is the right answer, that no matter what we were doing, if we were working in Vietnam, we were working with Australia, we were working with African nations, that in the end, our task was to put America first. What that did was it made sure that we had deterrence around the world. People knew we were tough, people knew we were strong, and they didn't challenge us. And that kept us out of wars, or kept our kids, our young men and women serving in the United States military out of harm's way. And then we had a bunch of specific accomplishments, too. The work that was done in the Middle East to generate the Abraham Accords is absolutely historic. It will change the lives of Emiratis. It will change the lives of Israelis and Bahrainis and Sudanese. And it will keep America more secure, too, because there's now friends and partners and allies in that region that are working alongside of each other. So those Abraham Accords were critical. Everyone would remember our visits to North Korea. The president sent me as his first emissary on a secret mission to Pyongyang in Easter of 2018, and we made some progress working on the challenge that Chairman Kim presents to the world. There's more to be done, but we made good progress. And then who can forget the fact that we, for the first time, acknowledge that China is an adversary that needs to be treated as such. And when they're stealing American jobs, when they're growing their economy on the back of the American worker, President Trump said, we're not going to let that happen. And we countered China on every front. No administration before had done any of those things. And I was proud to be a small part of it.
I want to focus on two of those things just really quickly. The Abraham Accords. People said it was impossible to bring the kind of accords that happened. They said it was impossible. How did you do this?
We took 40 years of failed American policy in the Middle East, and we stood it on its head. For a long time, there was this idea that if you didn't solve the fight between the Israelis and the Palestinians, that you couldn't do anything more. And we said, that's crazy. We're going to try a different way. And we did. We laid out a vision for what it should look like. And then they came to trust us. They knew that I would have their back. President Trump would have their back. And so these leaders, Prime Minister Netanyahu, Mohammed bin Zayed in the Emirates, great leaders in Bahrain, all said, we're going to do this. We're not going to make Israel our enemy. We're going to make them our friend, and we're going to work alongside them. And we'll still try and solve this problem that has been the historic problem, the Palestinian conflict, but we're not going to let that stand in the way of prosperity. And that reconception, that rethinking, that willingness to break glass and reimagine what was possible let us do something that, you're absolutely right. People told us, you guys are crazy. This can't happen. And, of course, it did.
China. Ever since I have been following China as a political force, when I was a kid, of course, the big story was that Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger had opened up relationships with communist China. It was no longer a closed society. And we watched China advance from a undeveloped nation to one of the second biggest economic force in the world. We also watched China manipulate currency. We also watched China dump products into the United States, some of which were defective. We also watched a trade imbalance open up with China that was horrific. We had mouth from politicians from both parties complaining about China, but no administration wanted to take China on except for the Trump administration. You went head to head with China. You called China out on these unfair currency practices. You actually implemented tariffs that hit China, and China, which is unreported to me, the biggest economic story of the last century and of this century, China backed down. That remains unreported. What you did with China, am I wrong? This is, we have never seen anything like this. We had the world's two superpowers and the United States won.
I said this a couple years back, and it was not noted. China declared economic warfare on the United States, and for decades, this is Republicans and Democrats both, so this is a partisan thing. For decades, presidents just said, I'm not going to deal with it. We're doing fine. We're going to let them go grow on the backs of the American worker and took millions and millions of jobs out of the American heartland. President Trump said, that's crazy. He said, we're going to do this in a way that's fair and reciprocal. He demanded it, and China backed down. Many of those tariffs remain in place, still generating great benefits for the American workers all across our country. When there were, you know, on other fronts, you know, when there were spies here inside the United States for a long time, we said that's too hard. We, the State Department, closed down the Chinese consulate in Houston when China refused to acknowledge that they had a problem and covered up the Wuhan virus. President Trump said that's nuts. We called them out for that. We left the World Health Organization that had been too political and wasn't solving this problem that has now killed millions of people all across the world. We were strong. We countered China in a real way. And it's really important that this continue, because this is a years, maybe even decades long confrontation. And the West must win this. The United States must win this. I'm convinced that we will.
Why is the United States media, the mainstream media, so opposed to telling the American citizens what is actually happening with China and American relationship?
Some of the media has been co-opted by China. They have big investments there. Certainly Hollywood, that's the case, right? They make films there. They market and sell films there. So they just, it's about money. That's what's held us up in a lot of the confrontations with China these last decades. The second thing is a broader issue, Bo, and you'd know this. They weren't about to give Mike Pompeo or Donald Trump any credit. So yeah. when we confronted this menace that was challenging people that I hear from all across America, that, and we went after it hard, the media wasn't going to give us any credit for it. That's okay. We did it. It was right. We made America better. We made America stronger. And we are all better off for the work that was done.
You wrote an op-ed for Fox News regarding the situation with John Kerry. I want you to explain the op-ed, but first I want to go back 3 days before that op-ed was published to a headline. Pompeo slams Iran news. When I was briefing Trump, Kerry was briefing Zarif. This is unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yet I can tell you this is true. Secretary Kerry, we knew, was talking to for the foreign minister of Iran, an adversary both that had killed hundreds of American soldiers. And Secretary Kerry chose to befriend this fellow named Javad Zarif. He's the foreign minister of Iran, and he spoke to him a number of times. And I am convinced he was telling the Iranians, just hang on. Pompeo will be gone. President Trump will be gone. And you can survive. And when you do, you'll get a better deal. You'll get to go back into this little sweetheart deal that we gave you. It undermined what we did. It was deeply unpatriotic what Secretary Kerry did. And he shouldn't have been briefing Zarif while there were others who were in power running American foreign policy.
What should happen here?
Well, I'd start with this. Someone needs to figure out precisely what he said and when he said it, and figure out if there is ongoing damage that continues from what he told them. I don't know the details, but we all need to come to understand that. Second, he needs to explain why he chose to do this. And then finally, the American people need to know today, the United States, the same team, Secretary Kerry's people, Wendy Sherman, a fellow named Robert O'Malley, Jake Sullivan, y'all wouldn't know these names necessarily, but these people negotiated the bad deal with Iran. They are in Vienna, Austria today, working to put America back into that deal. That presents real risk to the United States, enormous risk to our friend and ally Israel, and friends, and real risk too to our Arab partners in the Middle East. All the good work that we did in the Middle East risks being undone if they continue to head down this path and give the Iranians a sweetheart deal in tens of billions of dollars again.
I have always not understood and been confused by the Obama administration's embrace of Iran, how we were able to send billions of dollars in cash in the middle of the night to Iran while it was still the number one state sponsor of terrorism around the world. What we thought we would get out of this nuclear deal that Biden and Kerry are so anxious to link us back into. Help me, please. Help me understand, what is it that the left sees with Iran that I'm not seeing or that we're not seeing?
Boy, I wish I could help you with that one. Sometimes you can see somebody's argument that disagrees with you, right? You can see their logic. I literally cannot posit a rationale for getting back into this flawed deal that President Trump withdrew from. It will embolden the Ayatollah and the mullahs. They'll continue to punish their people. They'll commit human rights violations. They'll commit terror acts. They'll pay Hezbollah and militias throughout the Middle East to go undermine the very things that we care about and put our military folks at risk. It is incomprehensible. I can't figure out what it is. I don't want to go dark side and attribute some bad motive to them. But when you are supporting the world's largest state sponsor of terror and undermining our friends in Israel, something is horribly, terribly amiss.
I would like to ask you another question, and this goes to your tenure serving America as our intelligence chief with the CIA. Many of us have, I'm speaking for me, I guess I have now a distrust of the intelligence community. I think that there is an ideological war that's being played out, and that's why some of these leaks against President Trump and the Trump administration, the idea that this phony dossier could come from British intelligence and our intelligence didn't jump in and say, wait, this is entirely wrong. And what is going on inside America's intelligence in communities? Is there an ideological war being played out? What's going on?
So I can only speak for the organization that I ran, the Central Intelligence Agency. Most of what you described there came from our FBI. I don't think there's any doubt that there were really bad actors leading the FBI that engaged in behavior that was dangerous and bordered on criminal. We saw what Comey did, what McCabe did. We saw the dossier that they signed off on, or the FISA warrants that they signed off on when they knew that there was something amiss. This is unexplainable other than brutal politics that is the worst of what American intelligence has to be. My observation for the team that I led at CIA is, while there are always bad actors, most of these folks were much like our military. You know, a president comes, a president goes, they're going to do their job. They're going to try and deliver exquisite intelligence so the commander-in-chief can make a good decision. We've got folks operating in deep, dark places doing remarkable intelligence collection work. They're a collection of really talented, capable people that are professionals at the CIA, and we need to make sure that whether there are bad actors at the FBI or the NRO or the CIA or any other one of those three-letter intelligence agencies, that we make sure that they never have the capacity to influence policy and alter the very intelligence that the American decision makers, our presidents, need to make the best decisions for America.
A personal question before we let you go. You graduated number one in your class at West Point. When did you realize that your life was headed towards service? And how does a guy become the number one graduate at West Point?
I can't answer that other than, you know, my mom and dad made sure I studied hard all my whole life growing up. So I credit my parents for that academic success. I was blessed. America has so blessed me. I had this incredible opportunity to go to West Point, to go to the United States Military Academy. And I loved my time there. I loved my time serving as a young soldier back in the days of the Cold War. And I have always known that America has been so great to me that I had a responsibility to try and give back, to try and serve. And I've been so blessed that I've had these incredible privilege moments in my life to be a congressman and then the CIA director and secretary of state. That public service is something that I think is important for each one of us to do at some place along the way in our life. And I'm just so happy that I had the chance to do that. I hope I served America well in each of those places.
You, sir, there's no doubt that you served America well. And many of us hope that your service to this country is not by any means over. We're looking forward to seeing what you do next.
Thank you, sir. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, arguably one of the best secretaries of state in American history, on with yours truly, James Golden, a.k.a. Snurly, WABC Talk Radio 77. We'll be right back.